Hey everyone, welcome back to the Film Fund Podcast. I'm your host, founder and executive producer at the Film Fund, Thomas Verity. I'm also an award-winning filmmaker, producer, and film festival judge. I started the Film Fund to give artists and filmmakers an easier, alternative way to get their film funded. Instead of working on a screenplay, crowdfunding campaign, or a grant application, you write one sentence pitching your film for a chance to receive up to $10,000 and other prizes to make it. We are thrilled to announce that our winter 2021 narrative and documentary contests are now open. Check us out at thefilmfund.co to enter your one-sentence pitch for a chance to win up to $10,000 to make your film. And we want to remind listeners that contests do happen regularly, so if you are listening at a later date, check the website at thefilmfund.co for the most up-to-date information. Today we have Eli Hess joining us, one of the Film Fund's amazing and unique judges. He is actually not a filmmaker, does not come from a film background. The Film Fund is his main film experience, and I love that because he brings such a unique perspective to the Film Fund judging. I didn't want to have all filmmakers when I was assembling the initial judging panel. Eli is an architect, comes from an architecture and artistic background, and really sees the world in a unique way, different than your typical filmmaker or producer would. So I think it's very important to have that perspective when judging pitches and, you know, evaluating stories for the Film Fund. Eli, we're so excited to have you today. Thanks so much for coming. You can give a much better background about yourself than I can. So if you want to go into that and discuss, you know, art, architecture, how you think they relate to filmmaking.
Thanks for having me on, Tom.
Absolutely.
I'm a designer. I live out in Seattle. I work for a company that does interior office space. I view the world as just everything that we've built as humans. I refer to it as the built environment. And I love looking up at buildings, looking at all the details that other people might overlook. I find that when buildings work the best, we don't notice them. So you really only notice bad space. So it's kind of a not very glorious profession, because you really only get sued if something doesn't work. So I really enjoy it, but I definitely appreciate films, but have no film background, like Tom said.
How do you view, that's definitely an interesting perspective on architecture. I mean, I'm not an architect. I never thought about it like that. Like, you don't notice things, and that's good. Design, I guess, but in viewing art as a whole, does that also influence how you see that?
Like going through a museum, I really think that art, I like when it speaks directly to you and you don't have to really go searching for it. I think that's when it's the most powerful. Just like when I'm judging these sentences, really, if they deliver something to you that's powerful in just one sentence, it's worth its weight in gold. And you really don't have to like sit there and scratch your head. And you know, maybe if it's something that you do every day for a living, you want to really sit there and scratch your head about it. But I think to be accessible, art really needs to be clear and deliver its message in a concise way.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I mean, one of the reasons I'm so passionate about filmmaking and the art of film is that it has such a, and any art, I guess, it has a power to affect the viewer in an emotional way. And being able to do that in one sentence concisely really is a powerful thing. And it's difficult too. But like you said, I think being able to effectively convey that vision and affect someone just by writing one sentence, I think that's really powerful. So I think that's a great view you have. And I think it's an awesome perspective you bring to the judging. What do you find unique about the art of film?
I definitely think that it's a very unique art in that it comes to you. You can sit down and sort of just experience you're sort of, there's a distance between you and the screen, right? You don't really have to interact with it. It can also kind of just like envelop you. Like there's this imaginary component to it where you and your own experiences come to the table when you're watching a film, where it, if you're a good filmmaker, you're producing something that is your own experience, but you're also trying to convey a message that can interact with someone else that you've never met before. And I think that there's a very isolated experience that you have as a viewer, and when you're experiencing film, that you can kind of, you don't need to know anything about the person that made it or what they were thinking, but if it's done right or if it's done well, you kind of know a lot about them at the same time,
Yeah,
whether you
they're
want to or
injecting
not.
exactly. I mean, whenever you're writing a character, there's always going to be part of yourself in that character. You're going to
Totally.
be in whether it's a conscious or unconscious process, you're injecting your own experiences into that character and into that story. So I think that's super interesting. And it has to do with empathy too. And I guess all art really goes down to empathy and how you're interacting with it. But like you said, film, you don't. You're, it's kind of this external experience at the same time where it's affecting you.
Yeah, and I don't think that you can have the ego that you have when you're a different type of artist. I think like public sculpture or architecture can have this macho egoism to it that people, but film is different. You can't really just be a sort of hard-headed, ego-driven filmmaker because you're not going to have created something that people want to watch. And unless it's the best cinematography that has ever been produced, you're not going to want to watch something that's been designed or written by somebody who's it's all about them. They have to have this sort of worldly context and write characters that are approachable and understandable.
Absolutely, and it's collaborative art form too. I mean,
Definitely.
I don't know anything about sculpture other than the first thing. This is so like insulting to the sculpture community, I'm sure, but it makes me think of that SpongeBob episode where he has like the big hunk of granite and just like hits it, and then it's instantly
Chisel.
Michelangelo or chisel, yeah, whatever. But it's I feel like it's usually more of an isolated art form,
Definitely.
sculpture or architecture, whereas with filmmaking, not only do you have to collaborate with your crew and your cast, but you also, like you said, have to bring in a worldview, and write approachable characters and write stories that can resonate with people. So I think that's super interesting. And I guess that point comes from your outsider perspective, not being a filmmaker. You're able to appreciate that more.
Totally.
So when you're reading a pitch, it maybe it resonates with you more. Whereas maybe it would be lost on another judge who lives, breathes film every day. It's like, oh, this is this type of, character or theme or archetype, but you're viewing it from a wider artistic lens, no pun intended, which I think is pretty interesting. Do you think that greater art background makes you a better judge? Not better than, the other judges, but just
Yeah,
different and good.
definitely brings something else to the table. And I think when I'm going through and judging, I'm looking for things that I don't really have a that brain telling me that, oh, that might not work, or oh, they're going to really struggle with doing that for a certain amount of money, or I'm just there to judge it based off the merit of the idea. And also looking for things that I've never thought or seen before. So if we were talking the other day, some coworkers and I about innovation and how we define that. And I think to me, it was something that it's like, oh, I wish I thought of that. And that's sort of like what creativity and what innovation should be, is someone has a brilliant idea and they just need some help figuring out how to convey it to the world.
What are, if you can remember, some of your favorite contest entries you've seen as a judge?
I told you the one that I called you afterwards about the guy that goes into the church
Yes.
looking for forgiveness
Yeah,
from the cleric. And just when you read it, it's so funny. We've read so many of these, right, Tom? That as soon as you read it, you know that was good. And you don't have to sit there and like, well, was that a sentence, or that didn't really sound right, didn't really flow, I'm not sure what they're gonna do with the money. There are certain ones, there's not that many each round that are just really concise.
No, and it's interesting because, we say a lot on the podcast and talking to other judges, it's so hard to make those final choices. But on the other hand, it is so easy to get to those
It
finalists
really is.
sometimes, because when you see a good sentence, it's almost like, not a very eloquent way of putting it, but it's like the holy shit feeling. It's like, oh my God,
Totally.
like I can picture this story. And we can't talk, I don't have the exact sentence of that priest's murder story. That sounds, because it hasn't been produced yet. And our current rule, or I'm thinking about changing this, but the current rule is we don't release the sentences until the films are produced, out of respect for the winners. But
I like that.
the overall project is about a priest and a murder and confession, and we'll leave it at that. But when, going through all these sentences, certain ones stick out. And it's always a cool feeling. And it's easier than you would think to kind of get to those finalists. So what, you talked about this a little bit, but what do you look for in a submission, and how do you think that might differ from what a filmmaker would look for?
I as a viewer, I love documentary film. So I'm always looking for some obscure idea that someone knows a ton about, and I've never read or seen anything about it. I think that that always merits a really interesting film. So always on the lookout for that. And then I would say that if there's some sort of clear description or presentation of a character that you can kind of get behind. If there's, I think about a lot in film, there's not a ton of, presentation of people of color or people of different various backgrounds. And if so, there's a presentation of something like that's sort of like this interesting new take on something that you maybe have seen before, or it's sort of like a spin off of. So sometimes I'm just trying to think of these in my head, right? Like of these sentences that we've read before. If it's just a delivery of a story that you want to watch, it sounds so stupid, but if it's sort of like a like, hey, there's this very, very short little idea I have, and this is what I need the money for. It doesn't have to be some crazy change the world thing, but if it's just a different perspective that's fresh and something that I haven't seen, that it's perfect. I mean,
And it
when
does
you see it,
sound,
you know.
it's, you said something super important there, and you said it was stupid, but at the same time, it's not stupid. I would call it maybe surface level, but it's so much deeper than that. It's, do I want to watch this?
Yeah,
It's
totally.
really as simple as that. That's kind of the first, I mean, yeah, we talk a lot about on the blog, conflict and what are the stakes of the story, and does the use of funding relate to those stakes and the conflict, and that's really what makes a strong sentence, and it does, and that's all valid. But at the end of the day, it's really, do I want to watch this? And I think bringing up documentaries is an interesting point when you said you want to learn about something maybe you're not too familiar with, or experience stories about people of color. The word that popped into my head was esoteric, and it's kind of like viewing something, even if it's not esoteric or like the secret thing, but it's viewing something in a new way, or something in a way that's not as familiar. And I think that's what can make it interesting. And that's what I like about your perspective, because you, as a non-filmmaker, are viewing these sentences in an entirely new and different way than the current judges, or not the current judges, the other judges, who all have a filmmaking background. And they all have different backgrounds. Some are more academic. We have people of color on the judging panel, so we do get a mix of different perspectives on the sentences. But I love that you said, do I want to watch this? Because your architecture background is so important, and your artistic background is important as a judge, but you also have more of a viewer's mind, I think, as a non-filmmaker. Like, I've seen memes online about, you know, there's this account, shout out to, I think it's called Movie Set Memes or something on Instagram, but it's like normal people watching a movie and enjoying it, and then filmmaker analyzing every single detail, and they're like sitting there like, so like that's how we're looking at these sentences, whereas you're, yes, you have a different artistic approach, and your experiences are different, but you also have that unique perspective as a viewer, which I think is so important. When we do get to those finalists, and when you're, let's say you had to pick one sentence over the other, and you have two really good entries, how do you make that decision?
It happens a lot. There's usually a couple extra. I just read them again and again, probably, you know, read it twice, read the other one twice, go back and forth. And it really just comes down to what is more catchy, you know, what, because this is such a short entry and you're able to do that, you're able to reread, you know, what do I leave? Just like watching a movie, when you get up from the couch, you're like, that was awesome. Or, that wasn't that great. Same thing with a sentence. If you read it and you're like, wow, not only is this person a really good filmmaker, probably, but they also can really put together a catchy sentence. And so what do you, you know, you're looking for something that's, so as you're putting your sentence together, read it, you know that someone will be reading it. And I'm sure people are, but I've also seen times where there's a really great idea, but some weird grammar junction in the middle where it's just like, you know,
it takes you out of it almost.
Yeah, it totally does. It's like if your first scene of your movie had a little, you know, glitch in it, or it didn't really, a character read his line wrong or something, you know, you want to just make sure there's a good flow and that you're leaving like a really good taste in the judge's mouth about what this is going to be.
Yeah, it should be polished. And yeah, it is, it's really micro storytelling. It's storytelling. It's one sentence, but you're giving us a glimpse into the world of the bigger film.
And even important to have that. To me, I put a lot more emphasis on the beginning of the sentence, what's the film about, which I'm, you know, you probably do too. And even as something funny where it's like, we just need to feed our staff or our crew, you know, not a bad way to say it. I don't need to know everything about what you're going to do with the money. But if you do tell me about it, you know, that you're halfway through production and you just need to finish her off, that's cool too, you know?
Yeah. And it really depends on what the beginning of that sentence is, because if you have such an amazing premise and your funding use is a little bit more open-ended, like we need to pay our crew or I need to hire a cinematographer, and you have a super catchy, super conflict laden, I don't know if that's the right way of saying that, but super engaging premise in the beginning of the sentence, a more open-ended funding use is fine. I mean, I think it's great when sentences do use something specific, and I always look at Treehouse as an example of that. It's like the use of funding was to build multiple treehouses, which related to the premise of the guy builds a treehouse every day and it disappears. So that really tied the story together. But if you do have, I mean, it could be something like production design could be an amazing use of funds too. Like say you're, to talk about that priest story, I don't have the exact entry in front of me and we can't release it yet anyway, but let's just say hypothetically the use of funds was for production design. That's super vague. But at the same time, production design is what props am I using? What set dressings am I using? It creates the world of that film. So you have that priest, you have that murder, production design. Well, that's super important. I'm picturing like robes and maybe a confessional stall. And like this guy knows he needs to create the world of the film, and it almost, even though it's kind of vague, it strengthens the premise a little bit because it gives us a glimpse into what it looks like. But then you have other sentences that have won, like Americano, that had such a strong premise part about a Syrian refugee hacker who was used as a political pawn, and they needed funding for post. And the premise was so strong that the open-ended use of funds for finishing post-production was like, well, this is an amazing story that needs to be told and they need to finish it. So I totally agree with you there. I have so our digital producer Tom puts together these kind of outlines for the podcast, and this bullet here is if you have any funny or interesting stories together, this is the last chance to talk about them. Well, Eli and I were in the same fraternity in college, which is how I know him, so I don't really think any of them would be related to the film fund. So I thought that was funny, but we'll skip over that one for now. What advice would you give to filmmakers or even artists, given your broad perspective you have?
I don't feel like I'm old enough or wise enough to give this advice, but what I've been thinking a lot about lately is don't be afraid to get a new experience in your repertoire. I started out making sculpture with my dad, actually. We were building, 100-foot long, 50-foot tall, big public sculptures, and so I learned to weld, and now I'm working at an architecture firm. And neither of those experiences are bad. They're both just adding to the diversity of my experience as a professional. And I think that, if you're a filmmaker, don't be afraid to make or spend time thinking about an idea that you're not crazy about, just because you'll learn that there was good parts of it, and maybe it didn't come together. That you need to make mistakes. Ugh, I hate hearing that, but it's true. You need to spend time doing things that you don't necessarily wake up every day and want to do, just to have that experience of knowing that when you find the thing you want to do or you want to that you like, you'll just like it so much more.
Using that phrase, making mistakes or doing something you're not super into at the time, it made me think of that previous bullet, funny or interesting stories together, and our time in college. I don't know if you remember, but the first short film I ever made, I was stupid and brave enough to show it to some guys in the Pike House, and I don't know if you were there or not, but it was terrible. Like, the first short film I ever did. Yeah, I could probably list off some names that would be meaningless to people listening, but it was like, it was enough people there where it was like a real audience, and it was so bad, but I didn't know how bad it was at the time. My buddy and
I... The film bad or the situation was bad?
The film bad. Also the situation. Like, why am I showing this film to a bunch of frat bros? Like, I don't know. But as bad as the film was, I learned so much on that set. Like, it was literally me and a couple of buddies I knew from high school who were either interested in film or theater. And everything sucked. Like, the acting sucked. The directing was terrible. Cinematography was terrible. It was literally me with a DSLR, my dad holding a boom pole for the sound for every scene. And we just filmed it in like a weekend. And the only thing that was good, I think the writing was decent, but everything else fell apart. But I'm bringing all this up to say that without that first experience I created for myself, even though the end product really wasn't that great, the process of putting myself out there and going for it and learning was super important. And like, even if I'm directing something on set, whether it was for the corporate job I had or Son of Blackbeard, the passion project I did, like, I'll actually think of moments on the set of that film and be like, oh, don't do that, kind of, or oh, this actually was, a good way of getting this directing, this emotion across to this actor. So that is something. And putting your work out there too, because even though it was a closed audience, it was just some buddies in college, it's still an important step to display what you're working on. Like, I'm sure even in the world of sculpture, people create things that, earlier in their career, maybe they didn't think it came out the way they thought it would. But I'm sure it's still important to show people and kind of discuss it.
Definitely.
So yeah, I think it's good to just make things.
Yeah.
And the welding is
worried about
too.
How they're going to be received.
Yeah, exactly. And especially like venturing into other skill sets. Like, I'm sure you don't weld on the job in your architecture day to day, but I'm sure that learning that experience taught you some kind of skill about how to approach something or how to do something. So I think having an eclectic background like that is super important too. What do you have in store for the future? You said you're living in Seattle, an architect.
Yep.
Any interesting plans or projects coming up?
Getting married this year.
Oh my God, I'm gonna act like I'm surprised, even though I already know. But that's awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, I don't know. I work on interiors right now, and I never really thought that that's what I would be doing.
What does that mean? Like vaulted ceilings and.
No, just
furniture,
in, like, office space. So,
okay.
So anything inside the walls of a building that when a new client moves into the space, they redo it.
Okay.
So I do a lot of Amazon office spaces, and they're
cool.
They're very particular about everything in their offices. So, but you know, you get to it's paint and carpet glorified.
It's
sometimes
what?
You get to paint and carpet.
Ah.
And furniture. And sometimes you get more say in it. Sometimes you don't have much say in it.
Mm-hmm.
Here, pick from these finishes.
I see.
But I want to do ground up work. I want to do sustainable buildings. That's the future. You know, buildings use so much of the energy that we use as humans, and they need to be more efficient if we're going to stick around. I don't think we're going to be terraforming Mars in my lifetime, so we need to make our life here on Earth more pleasant. Okay, here's an analogy. When you read a good film fund sentence, you know. When you step into a good building, you know. There's a building here in Seattle. There's a building here in Seattle that, hate to say it, was designed by Jeff Bezos, and it's called the Spheres. And I went into it for the first time last week, and it blew me away. It's basically like a giant spherical greenhouse that's four levels, and you can just walk up and around this place, and it's like a meeting center for Amazon employees. But it totally inspired me that is what our future buildings will look like. You know, it's not Jetsons anymore, it's current. And to be on the forefront of designing green, sustainable buildings that have a long lifetime, that aren't just going to decay and fall apart like our, you know, strip malls will. That is what I have in store, and we'll
That's
see
awesome.
If I can get there.
And I love that analogy you made, walking into a building, reading a film fun sentence, you know. It makes me, so you said Bezos designed the building. To my knowledge, he doesn't have an architecture background, does he?
He doesn't. But he actually, so our firm was the first firm to sort of team up with him and help him design his offices. And he is so intelligent and quick with his innovation that the classic story is that his buildings all need operable windows. So a lot of office buildings, the windows don't open because it's a whole thing with HVAC and, you know, the suction and all these different things.
Angry board meetings where people want to jump out.
Exactly. And so his buildings do, but it's not efficient for the building to have its windows open at certain times of day, like peak sun loading hours. So there's a light on the interior of the building that either is green or red. And if it's red, you shouldn't open the windows. And if it's green, you should. And he was walking around with one of our managing directors, and he said, why do you need a green light and a red light? Just need a green light. Save 50% of the energy. And it's a good point. You know,
yeah.
Things like
just
that. Nobody. So he just has this conniving questioning of what exists today and how can it be better. And I think all architects have that. There's some really prolific architects right now that are just totally transforming the built environment and how we are thinking of buildings as not just boxes that we pump heat and cold air into and we can see out of them sometimes. It's more like, how can they be integrated into our lives as we want to live our lives? So he's doing that with his company. You know, how can I integrate my company into the way that you would most easiest live your life.
And that's such a good soundbite too about integrating into your own life. I mean, that's
totally,
that goes back to what we were talking about in terms of approachable stories and relating, you know, your worldview to another person and making it accessible. Also, the fact that Bezos, a non-architect, is helping design a building, that goes back to eclectic backgrounds and really seeing the world as this creative blank canvas where you can experiment. And like, I'm sure, you know, I mean, I don't know what Bezos does day to day. I know he just stepped down as CEO, but I'm sure designing a building usually is not on his to-do list. So it's outside the scope of his work. But at the same time, I'm sure that helped him in some other aspect of his life, that different type of thinking. I bet he could produce a film if he wanted to. I mean, Amazon does, Amazon Studios. Yeah. So I guess he does that anyway.
He's got his hands in a lot of projects, yeah. I know.
Yep. Well, Eli, that's awesome. So excited for the future. I love the perspective you take. I want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak today on the Film Fund podcast. We just opened our newest winter 2021 contest period yesterday for narrative and documentary contests. They are now open, so check out the filmfund.co, that's C-O, to submit your entries. I'm reading the script. It's telling me to remind them to blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I'm reminding you, listeners, to check out our social channels where you can see all of our amazing prizes and sponsors. Last contest, we had Meister Filmworks sponsor a complete color grading package. We had Expressway Cinema Rentals sponsor a two-day rental kit with an Ursa Mini G2 and an awesome set of lenses for that. We don't have the exact details on all of the prizes yet, but we will know in the coming weeks as they unfold and I make some phone calls. But we will have kits with gift cards, and we will have Adobe Creative Cloud subscriptions to help you make your films. So some awesome prizes. And that's in addition to the up to 10K you can get straight cash money. So remember that the blog is also filled with great filmmaking and producing tips. So check that out as well at thefilmfund.co/blog. Sign up for our newsletter and follow us on social media to stay up to date on what's happening at the Film Fund. I want to thank everyone again for listening. And Eli, I want to thank you again for speaking. Do you have anything else you want to add as we wrap up?
Oh, thanks for having me on, Tom. It's awesome.
Absolutely.
Love what you're doing.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm so glad to have you as a judge contest after contest. Remember, everyone, tune in every Friday for new episodes. And I think that is a wrap. Talk to you soon.